They would put beer on their ancestral altar, specifically Mexican beer, because this person is Mexican. And you could actually tally and keep track over not just evaporation, but how much it was going down every day. And there was, like, you know, this idea that, yeah, a certain amount would evaporate, but you need to know how much that is, because more is actually going to go down. Ever wanted to jump into magic practice but are unsure where to start? Welcome to this special episode where I lay out witchcraft basics I've learned over my 3 years of hatch witchery, a simple, easy guide of a few basic things that can apply to all beginner witches, wizards, and all sorts of magical beings. So sit back and get ready to listen, because class is in session. Meow meow, hello my dear.
Meow meow, you look so nice in purple. That is very much a good witchy color.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm always self-conscious about wearing this dress because it has the big tear right down there. But, like, it's so perfectly in the middle. It's kind of a vibe,
it's, you know? Beautiful. So, like,
thank you. I appreciate it. You look gorgeous, too. I love your agate. Such an agate vibe. I would have worn mine if I had known. That's okay.
And I am in my witchy black, which is pretty much 3/4 of my wardrobe regardless. So can't say it was intentional.
Were you the ex-goth back in the day?
No. Oh my gosh. I just was always, the minute I hit New York City, something shifted in me and all I wanted to wear was black. And I mean, it's a city where most everybody is wearing black anyway. And it just never stopped. Yeah. And I moved to LA and people were like, you've got to like navy blue. Can you please just lighten it up? And I'm like, but I like wearing black.
So I'm from New York. So good. Yeah, I love black, but I don't wear it enough. And black cloth is actually a regularly used tool in witchcraft, and it's something you can just cut up black shirts for. So I don't know if that's a good segue or not. But today we are talking about Intro to Witchcraft, Witchcraft 101, if you will. I have been a witch practicing for 3 years now, and I am now exiting what I believe to be my hatch witch phase, where I am more confident in my crafts, I'm more confident in my skills and what the heck I'm doing, I'm confident in who I'm communing and working with spiritually. So it is a good time for me to reflect on the basics, and this episode is very much going to be for people who are just starting out and wanting to come into this and wanting to practice, quote unquote, if you will. So yeah, very exciting, and I'm happy that Trey allowed me to take the space to
allowed
share
you
today.
Please, I can't get out of the way.
That sounds so bad.
I'm so excited.
I didn't mean it like that.
No, I think so many sensitives explore the witch space, like, period. I just think that it is a standard, what would you say, like a gate into, because it's one of the only places, especially when I was a kid, it's one of the only places where any of the Beyond the Veil stuff was being talked about, was being acknowledged. So I naturally kind of pulled into a lot of this. And whenever I met people who were in this space, like I was just, oh, tell me more.
Yeah. And I very much think, you know, because of how open my generation is to things, there's more of this space, but these spaces, but also in there being more, there's now less, you know, where it's like, oh, there's so many different divisions of it, mm-hmm. so many different kinds of witchcraft, you know, so many different avenues to explore. You know, I feel like back a couple decades ago, you could meet a witch and it would be like, oh my gosh, like, yay, witch. But now it's like, oh, okay, just because you're a witch doesn't mean you're a good person, you know, which is still true.
That was always the case. And I think one of the reasons why a lot of people kept it close to the vest. I mean, I have friends who, you know, are sensitives or psychics who may or may not be practicing any degree. So witch or paganism or Wicca. But they had past life experiences where they were persecuted as a witch. I know in a way long time ago, multiple past lives, I was one of the, you know, the healer people, and choices were made and mistakes were made and it had ramifications. So my feeling is that for, I don't know, about 20 or 30 years, being a witch was kind of cool and okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know, we'll see what happens in the future, but I just think there's so many now that it can't be contained in the horrible old patriarchal kind of ways that it used to be. I don't know. Are you picking up what I'm laying down?
No, I agree. Like, it's there, everybody is starting to become the minority. So it's no longer becoming a minority in terms of witches and witchcraft. And I think, you know, that's why it's really important to do stuff like this. Just because if you're called to witchcraft, as we've talked about before, you've probably practiced it in a past life. Especially understanding that magic is all around us. Magic is everything. Magic is science. So we are all practicing magic, whether we realize it or not. It's just a matter of realizing it at some point. I think that segues really nicely. I do have a couple disclaimers about this episode first.
Responsible Gen Z-er.
Yes, I'm trying. As we've discussed in the past, I am connected to deities. I have a lot of friends who are not, and I also don't think that just because you practice witchcraft means you have to be connected to a deity. So because of that, the things we are going to talk about today, or the things I'm going to present today, are not going to be deity focused. I will do a little bit of a deity stuff at the end and just talk about what it's like working with a deity and how I shift these practices for that. But this is really just going to be a basic smattering of just really basic essential stuff for witchcraft, tools, practices, and stuff like that. I have a good plan of where we're going to go. And the idea behind this is it's going to be bare bones, it's going to be deconstructed, and it's going to be applicable for everybody, hopefully, where you can just take pieces of what I'm talking about and apply it to your own witchcraft. Excellent. With that being said, this is based off of my experience as well as books that I have, and I will discuss which books today.
We're not selling anything. Like, this is our experience, and we're just here sharing it with you. And man, if this isn't your vibe, it's cool. Come back next week. We're going to talk about other stuff next week.
Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? So yeah, don't feel like this is like we're asking you to take notes and to climb aboard the witchcraft. This is just something that is part of our lives, and we just wanted to talk about it. So.
Yeah, and just because today is going to feel very information-based and it's a percussion, so a presentation and discussion, just because it's like that doesn't mean this is the end-all be-all. If these work for you, great. If not, you know, please practice how you wish to, because that is definitely the theme for today is practice how you wish. But cool.
Practice awesome. How you wish or practice how you witch?
Both. I said wish, but like, yes, both. Absolutely.
However it is that you witch our witch. Friends.
Okay, cool. So yeah, awesome. I guess the first place that I had to start today, I feel like is one of the first places a lot of witches start, or at the very least, it is a staple for a lot of witches. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is having an altar, just getting an altar set up, and what is an altar. First, Trey, do you use an altar? We've literally never talked about this before. If you've ever had an altar before, are you an altar gal?
I'm an altar gal. So when I first studied Wicca, I was 24-ish. So, we're talking 30 years ago. And I'm not a practicing Wicca now, but one of the things that I remember it's part of it is like helping you to set your intentions. So if you gather up certain
implements.
Yes, thank you.
With an eye.
Yeah,
yes.
with an eye. Thank you. It just helps you to kind of focus and to feel empowered around. And you're going to talk about all of this, but I absolutely had an altar. And then that practice kind of went away, but, guess what? I've got probably four altars that naturally grew around my house. And I know very few people who are sensitives who don't naturally, some people just pick up rocks, pick up feathers, pick up twigs, pick up leaves, and then they put it in. Well, I might as well just make a pile of them. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
An altar. And other people, you know, like my Latina friends, you know, if they celebrate Day of the Dead, they absolutely have altars to their ancestors. My Buddhist friends do this. So this is not, this is, you know, I practically want to say, like, this isn't even a witchcraft thing. This is across many cultures.
Absolutely. And it's very much just something that's practiced across multiple religions and cultures, various types of magic. There are a lot of roots in Wicca, but there's roots in other things. And, you know, because Wiccan and Wiccas are closed practice, I will say, or semi-closed, I will say, like, none of what I'm talking about today reflects directly on that. But yeah, it's used across a lot of different things. And like you said, people kind of just naturally have them sometimes. And you know, I feel like keeping the things that resonate with you most on a metaphysical, emotional, or spiritual level just in one place so that you can have them, you know, just starts to create an energy with it. So for those who are looking to have an altar and have a little intention or just know what intentions could be behind altars, the first thing to talk about is there are actually two types of altars. Do you know what the two types are, Trey?
I have no idea.
Oh, this is exciting. So the two types are ancestral altar and a personal altar. And I personally believe everybody who wishes to have both should have both. They're each used for their own thing. I think personal altar is the one most people are familiar with. This is going to be your space to practice things that are more centered on yourself and your magic. If you are doing a ritual to bring something into your life, or, you know, to set about on a certain course, this, you're going to be doing it at your personal altar. And likewise, it's going to have things that have resonated with you through your lifetime on it. You know, such as gifts that you've gotten in the past, animal tokens that represent your animals or who you are as a person. And more importantly, these altars in particular, but all altars are usually set up with a three-tier system. So, you know, you have the upper world, the middle world, and the lower world. And so if you set up your altar on a three-tiered system, you can actually separate the three items and items into those three categories of upper world, middle world, and lower world. Which I'm not segueing the best, but like essentially, like, you know, bones would probably go in the middle or lower world, depending on what the animal is. Certain birds may be in the upper world. You know, just understanding where your magic is coming from and going. Because especially, you know, with the Greek practices and ancient stuff like that, it was very much believed that those were the three main worlds inside this dimension of the upper, middle, and lower world.
Okay. I feel like this concept of upper world and middle world and lower world also shows up over and over and over again across all cultures, times, and dimensions. But in this case, like, so, like, what is that? What does it mean? What's each?
Yeah, and I definitely, I was planning on bringing those three up in my introduction.
Oh, good. Okay. I will step away then.
So, no, it's okay. I segued horribly, but, like, essentially, you know, if you think of heaven, earth, and then hell is a bad way to put it, because I don't think either of those three are necessarily negative in connotation. And I think certain religions like to view it that way. And I also think of what is heaven versus what is, you know, the underworld can be different for practices and cultures. But essentially, you know, you have your angels and then you have your demons and then you have your middle world, which would be sprites and fairies and other things along that, that nature. And I do think all the dimensions can be played across these worlds. A lot of the witchcraft that I'm going to talk about today, I'm going to bring up the fact that it shows up in storytelling and things like this is all verified stuff. You know, this is stuff that has been practiced for a while, and the upper, middle, and lower worlds are very much something that is believed throughout many cultures in different ways. And I really think if you want to have a connection with all three, you should try to, you know, you should try and foster it, because certain deities will practice in a couple different spaces. Certains will just be in certain spaces. Your spirit guides may be operating from different worlds, upper, middle, or lower worlds, and it's helpful to know which ones. And they also connect back to the idea of superego, ego, and id. You know, the underworld representing your darkest desires, the darkness, but like still good intentions. But just the wants, you know, the things that are primordial for you. death, destruction,
creativity,
you know, pain. Yep. Creativity. Absolutely. The middle world representing things that are here for you in the present, tangible now, that you can see, feel, and touch, even emotions and stuff like that. And then the upper world representing an enlightened self, you know, a risen sense of being and character. Definitely angels and angel magic and stuff like that. So, you know, that's just kind of general. And I think having it on your altar, my altar, my personal, is actually set up where it's a 3-tier system, and it's upper, middle, and lower. And just having that practice in mind and understanding where you're pulling from for each is really valuable and important. So yeah, that kind of goes through those three worlds pretty well. And then that brings me to the ancestral altar. So if your personal altar is practicing for yourself and, you know, for your benefit, your ancestral altar is going to be the opposite. So it is going to be you communing with your ancestors, you giving offerings, doing worshipings, giving gratitude. It's an altar that is going to be dedicated to things beyond your life. I think this is a great place to keep photos of loved ones. I think, you know, if we are talking about naturally occurring altars, I think ancestral altars are very naturally occurring for a lot of people, because they'll set them up in their house of like, this is the family photo wall, or this is the shelves with all the family photos. That's kind of an ancestral altar. Yes, well, you know,
your grandparents were all doing ancestral when you had, I remember this is a big thing. I don't know if it is for your generation, but they would have every single picture, school picture from kindergarten all the way through high school, like stretched out on a wall. Okay, so that is part of the Gen Z. Sorry, but that's part of the experience.
It's one of the things y'all continued on for us.
Yes. You're welcome.
But thank you. But like, you know, even the idea of an urn on a mantle, you know, and you're putting incense next to it, or something, burning something next to your ancestors, is considered an offering. And, you know, it's considered practicing and holding that space. And so I think an ancestral altar is a great way to have reflection time. You know, I feel like your personal altar is going to be kind of grimy and used and have candle wax all over it, you know, and just be kind of like, ooh. But your ancestral altar is going to be nice and pretty and have all your ancestors and plants with it if you want. I also think if you are doing deity work, having space for your deities on that altar is really important. If you have statues that represent your deities, you can put them in personal or ancestral, but remember, personal's in, ancestral's out. So I think you should have a representation of them, maybe on both, you know, for when you're asking them for things versus when you are providing gratitude and, you know, centering yourself.
Well, that's lovely. And if I could jump in, so different deities, they also want different things as homages. So some people, like it'll be like food, or it'll be like a chalice of water, or metals, or I don't know. What is, you've said that you work with Hecate.
Well, and that segues actually really nicely, because, you know, this idea of offerings, it can be a number of things. For me and Hecate, it's usually fruits or dried herbs. And I'm going to talk about plants a little bit today, assuming I don't take too long. But, you know, it would just be offering up something that you present to the altar as open and available, letting that sit there in that space for a few days, and then disposing it of it in a way that feels appropriate and respectful. So if it's fruit, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to be burying it or placing it somewhere animals can find, because that is such a great offering to put it on your altar for a little bit and then go and feed it to the animals of the world. One of the person who I started practicing witchcraft with really early on, they would put beer on their ancestral altar, specifically Mexican beer, because this person is Mexican. And you could actually tally and keep track over not just evaporation, but how much it was going down every day. And there was like, you know, this idea that, yeah, a certain amount would evaporate, but you need to know how much that is, because more is actually going to go down. And if you were to leave liquids to consume, sometimes they will just go down on their own completely, you know, and that is you offering that liquid up. But if not, you know, if it's water or something like that, you can put in your plants or whatnot. So
Does
I think
friend
offering
have a theory about where the Pacifica was going?
No. So you know what's funny is we actually learned about this the same place we learned about an ancestral altar, which is this metaphysical shop that was in a shopping mall in our town. Yeah. And it was this man who specifically was an Ethiopian metaphysical shop, and it was stuff from Africa, and his magic was practiced in Africa. And in no way was he trying to, like, you know, like, we weren't going to do his practices to be respectful, but he was like, you need to have an ancestral altar, you know, one that you're giving out to and giving offerings. And he was the one who suggested the beer or a drink and saying, see how much it goes down. And it actually worked. Like, it went down. So yeah, we have no idea. I don't remember what he said, but he just made it seem like it would just be your spirits drinking it. I think having intention behind your offerings and saying who it is for is really powerful. You know, I think one of the biggest things to remember here is it doesn't have to be extravagant. I have dried yarrow and dried rose on, like, that I just offer up, and that's it, you know, and then I'll just dump it in the wind afterwards. Like, just something easy. I think art is also a really wonderful thing to offer up as well, if you're willing to do art for your spirits or your guides. But, like, don't overthink it, you know, just something nice, something easy.
Yeah, something that they like in this life, you know, that you are aware of. So I naturally, my dog recently passed, and I naturally left her water bowl and a little bowl of some of her favorite treats there. And it just was an instinct, because, you know, of course the compulsion is like, fill up the water bowl, make sure the dog's got, you know, sustenance. But what I was doing was creating an altar for her.
Yeah, well, and I recently watched a movie called The Farewell. I don't remember who was directed. Amazing movie. And there's a scene where they go to their ancestors' graves, and their graves are actual tables that you can put food on. And the whole family was there, and they would take bites of the food and then place it on the altar. You know, the grandma was like, the orange has to be peeled and open or else they won't be able to get to it, which I thought was a great touch. But, like, you know, this is something that cultures practice, is giving thanks to your ancestors in some way. And because of that, I feel like it is a safe practice to bring into your own space. It is a safe practice to mold to your needs or whatever makes sense for you and your spirits. And it is something I think everybody should be doing. But, you know, let's take that with a grain of sand. Like, obviously practice how you want. Okay, I'm going to asparagus there for that because I do have more to get to. So we've talked about altars and, like, you know, what they can be used for. I wanted to start getting into elements that are going to be on an altar, and then we're going to segue into actually doing a ritual.
Ooh, I didn't know. How exciting.
Yeah, because I was like, well, I can't just do sigils the whole time. That's going to be really boring. So yeah, some of the things that you're going to see on altars, there's a lot of stuff that we've already talked about, like if on your ancestral, having ancestors' photos or things that have called to you in your personal altar. That's pretty person-to-person stuff. But there are a few things that most people in witchcraft, or if you are trying to put intention down this path, I personally have on my altar. They're going to be a goblet, candles, a knife, also known as an athame. We're going to go through each of these. Incense, and then sometimes a wand. So starting with the goblet, obviously, you know, when you're doing a ritual, one of the really important things, one of the really important things for your altar, but also witchcraft, try and have four elements present, all four elements if you can. So on my altar, I have a jar, like a container of sand, I have candles, I have a goblet, and then I have incense. Incense representing the air, candles representing the fire, the sand representing the earth, and then the goblet will be filled with liquid to represent water. And I think when you are practicing witchcraft and doing rituals yourself, that is a really nice basic element to be putting into it, is to just, how can I have all four elements represented here? You know, if you're practicing outside, that can be your earth element. Like, that's it right there. You know, being in earth, being in nature can be your earth element. Likewise, being next to a river can be your water. On a windy day can be your air. It's really simple stuff, but just being conscious of the four elements being present. And so I think if you have a goblet that you are specifically designating for drinking purposes, obviously as a tea witch, nine times out of 10, mine's filled with tea. You know, you, and like, it's the classic scene from The Craft where they're passing around the goblet after they say things that's full of wine, you know, and obviously Catholicism uses it with the wine as well, and like the Holy Grail. So it's just one of those magical items that people have used for a while. Okay, so the next would be a knife, also known as an athame. I think I actually brought my knife today. This is mine. I love yours. Thank you. As my first knife, I was like, I want to get something good and fancy. So I went to Urban Arts, and this one called to me because it has the goddess on the hill right there.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
I think there's a lot of misconception about knives and witchcraft, especially with the older generations where people are thinking it's used for violence or things like that to harm anything. I would actually say if you have a knife that has been used for violence or harm or to draw blood and you're using that in your magic, please be aware of that. I would discourage it personally. I don't think bringing that kind of vibes into your witchcraft is good. I think having a knife that is specifically designated for witchcraft, that's what you're using it for, really, really helps. The way I use a knife personally is at the start of a ritual, I'll unsheath it.
Oh, it's got a sheath. And then, ladies and gentlemen, yes, it's got a sheath.
I love having a sheath. That is one of my needs for a knife, is to have a sheath on it. Right. It doesn't have to. And you can think of other ways to unsheath yours, maybe with a blanket. But, you know, the start of the ritual, it's unsheathed. And then at the closing of a ritual, and we say we're closing the ritual, we sheath the knife back up, you know, and it acts as one of the really nice ways to open and close a ritual, which I'll get into a little bit. I also use it to carve sigils into ground if you are doing sigil work on the ground. And I think one of the main things to use it for is to hold it and then do your chanting. Something that's really important to remember in witchcraft or just in magic in general is your right hand is your giving hand, your left hand is your receiving hand. So when you are interacting with the world in terms of on an energy basis, you are giving with your right and you are taking with your left. So if you were asking for something to come to you, I would be holding the knife with my left hand. And if you were asking to give something into the world, or if you were offering or healing, I'm holding the knife in my right. I also think a wand can work very similarly. I brought my wand today as well, which is my selenite wand. Mine actually broke in half, but these are really, really cheap.
We both have selenite wands.
Yay! I mean, honestly,
uncanny.
They're like $5. Like, they're perfect. And the idea behind the knife, the idea behind the wand, is you are channeling your energy through an object. You know, thinking of it as like a funnel, and it's just going through that object. You can do a lot of circling with it. So circling clockwise or counterclockwise around things to clear out. Clockwise being drawing in, counterclockwise being, you know, expanding out. You know, obviously a wand is safer to touch people with than a knife would be, so I wouldn't recommend doing that kind of wand magic with a knife.
Like put a lot of investment into a wand, and that's totally fine, but you can also go outside, and if a particular stick calls to you,
a stick,
that's your wand.
The person who I talked about who practiced, their wand is literally a stick that has a piece of bone and a rock attached with copper wire. And it is the craziest vibes you've ever seen it felt in your life. Like, really good vibes. I really encourage people to DIY a lot of this stuff.
Yes.
If you have a cup in your house, that's your goblet.
Yes.
Like,
and set it aside. Like, that you have to be willing to give up that goblet as, you know, your Saturday night wine glass.
Yeah. And I do think, if you can find a cup in your house that has always called to you that you want to set aside just for these purposes, that's a good idea. Okay, so the other two are incense and candles. This is going to be brief for those because I feel like a lot of people have worked with those in the past. Incense is obviously anything that you can burn that is going to fill the room with a smelly smoke. A lot of things are designed to be burned this way. Yep. Same with, you know, bundles of sticks absolutely act as your incense. these can be a really easy way to bring the air element into your practice, you know, because it is producing smoke, and smoke is the air. It's a visual representation of the air. What I'll say about incense, oh, go ahead. Were you gonna say something?
So I have a lot of Palo Santo and sage around the house.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's totally fine. Like, go to the local, you know, witchery store, and they're going to have a whole stand of like all the different kinds of smelly goodness. And, you know, every incense has like a different charge to it. So you can change it up. But one of the things that I also think of when it comes to smoke is it's, you know, it's clearing the negative energy, and it's just allowing you to think more specifically about what you're doing. Do you find that as well?
Well, and it's engaging your senses. And ooh. I think just like the elements, engaging your five senses during witchcraft really helps. You know, my knife with that goddess hilt, I feel it and I can squeeze it hard. You know, your things are going to have textures. Incense is one of the best and sometimes the only way to engage the sense of smell during witchcraft. You know, and like you said, Palo Santo, there's a lot of specific herbs or woods that are designed for certain things. And this is one of the best ways to funnel that. Working with Hecate, one of her biggest is dragon's blood, the scent, mm-hmm. Which is my favorite incense flavor. And it's, you know, one that she works with her a lot. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's a good way to fill the space. Incense is also used in clearings a lot, and energy clearings. Smoke is particular, like Palo Santo bundles. Or if you go to your witchcraft shop and you have a puck that you light, and then the puck slowly burns over 7 minutes, and then you can put dry herbs on it that will burn safely, and fill the space with smoke.
And one of the things I want to mention is not all scents work for everybody. So even if you're like, well, I want to do an abundance, you know, intention setting spell, and then you smell the incense that is for that and it doesn't jibe with you, oh my gosh, keep on walking, you know, because you said that you don't like Palo Santo.
I'm getting better about it. I don't love the smell. I know, but a lot of people use it, and what it is it's a physical response, and physical responses I feel like sometimes can be trained to get better. So it's not necessarily an emotional thing. It's just like the physical smell sometimes makes me ill, especially if I'm on an empty stomach.
Okay, so that makes me think that there's like a past life thing going on, which is another episode. You know, I have a friend who is on the shamanic path, and different plant medicines called to different people, and she loathes sage, she loathes Palo Santo, but her and tobacco get a lot done. So that is sort of frozen, burny thing.
Well, and I was gonna say, like, you know, if you want to do weed magic or tobacco magic, that can absolutely be your air element. That can be your incense.
And we don't mean the stuff with all the chemicals in it. Like, you got to go and get like,
not cigarettes, tobacco. Yeah. The good stuff. Yes. That actually segues really nicely because, you know, on candles, I'll touch on briefly first. I'm sorry. So, you know, candles, there is a lot you can do with candles. There's a lot of candle magic. I'm cutting it short on candles for two reasons. One, it's a whole episode if we really wanted to. And there's so many different practices with it. Two, I'm just starting to get into candle magic myself. So there is a lot of different things that I'm not familiar with yet. And I'm still trying to understand for my own practices. So I'm not going to speak on it a whole lot. But essentially, candles will provide your fire if you wish. They provide light to the space. They are absolutely something that you need to be cognizant of and aware of. If you are doing magic outside, please, please, please be cognizant of your candles and your incense. Just being cognizant of your space in general is really, really important when doing candle and incense work.
You know, and even inside, like, don't leave a candle burning on your altar and then like go out to a movie. No.
Well, and if you're going to leave something burning, make sure you stay in the room if possible, but at the very least the house, and make sure it's something that you know isn't going to fall over, because it is in a holder or it's in a designated space and it's going to be safe. You know, a lot of candle work will be the small 10-minute stick candles that you can get from every metaphysical shop. They're 89 cents usually or something like that. I really recommend burning those down all the way because they only burn for 20 minutes, and like that's a perfect perfect spell. And candles will also bring the colors into it, you know, where what color candle you're burning can correspond to your intentions and obviously the chakras. You know, if you're working with, you know, the root chakra, something that fits that candle a little better, is a little more brown, is going to, you know, emphasize it better. Oh, words. But, you know, just put some intention into that and study your colors. One of the links we can include in this is candle color and meaning.
Nice.
Because there are meanings for all of them. But yeah, so those are your big four that you have on the altar. And we are talking about burning herbs and having intention with herbs. And that segues really nicely. As an herb witch, I have to do a small segment on herbs, because herbs are really, and just plants in general, plant magic is really, really interesting to me and really fascinating. So I just kind of wanted to touch on it briefly.
Please do.
And I will prerequisite and say I work with plants more than I do crystals, but a lot of the information I'm about to give you is universal for both. So something that is or is not common knowledge, on its spiritual and metaphysical level, plants are just as unique as humans, to the point that plants actually have designations for each of them across all the different things. Those designations being, each plant will have an element associated with it, a planet, a zodiac, a stone, an animal, a world, and an archetype. So I'm going to give you my example for that I have, which is peppermint. So peppermint's planet is Mercury or Mars. I've also heard Venus for it as well. I think feel like planet's a little more debatable for the herbs. But across all sources, it is confirmed peppermint's element is air. So it is most associated with air. It is an upper world, element. So not middle or lower, it's an upper world. Its archetype is Melano, or the soothing one. And its zodiac is Aquarius or Gemini. And then for those who want the stone and the animal, its stone is blue topaz and the animal is the finch. So what's fun about those is, if you know how a plant's metaphysical components work, you can substitute and practice a little better. I think when you're getting into herb magic, it's really overwhelming knowing all the kinds of herbs and magic that there are there, and like, where the heck do I begin? The answer is, begin with what calls to you. I've always loved peppermint. I've always been called to it. And it wasn't until I got into witchcraft that I understood the elements that were behind it and why I liked it. The main purpose for this being, you can change things to make it fit how you want. So if a plant has similar components to another plant, metaphysically, they're going to be used similarly. So an herb that is very, very, very similar to peppermint is actually lavender. Lavender's planet is Mercury or Virgo. Its element is air. It is an upper world element. Its zodiac is also Aquarius or Gemini, and then sometimes Virgo. Its stone is fluorite, and then its animal is a wren, which is very, very similar to a finch. So these two element, these two herbs are very, very close to each other, that if you have something, a spell or something that calls for lavender, you can just swap it for peppermint and you're going to be fine. The point behind this being, stones and plants have a composition behind them that is intentional, and it is rooted in metaphysical science. And if you can understand that composition and what makes it up, you can use it a little more fluidly, I feel like, you know, change the recipes that you're following or change the teas that you're making, and understand how you connect with certain herbs goes a long way. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite herbs is rose, and that zodiac for rose is Taurus, and I'm a Taurus. So, you know, it lines up really, really well. So yeah, that's my little plant spiel. I don't know how much of that you did or did not know beforehand, Trey.
Only the basics. I do know that when I started studying Wicca, and I have my handy Wicca handbook.
I love it.
This thing is like 40 years old. This is Eileen Holland. And I, you know, this is before the interwebs where you can get on Amazon and pick whatever out. So obviously I went to a metaphysical store and this is the book that called to me. And literally it is just four pages for, you know, name a topic and it'll talk about, you know, how to set up your altar, or how to set up your ritual space. Wow. And then it goes through and it talks about the different plants and candles and colors and all the things that you just mentioned. And I got to tell you, it was really intimidating to me because like, it just seemed expensive. Like in order to acquire all of the tools. And I was like, do I need all of these things? And it, frankly, it was one of the things that kind of pushed me back. But one of the things I eventually learned is even if you have like one or two of these things, and as you move along, you will start acquiring, you know, you'll start,
yeah,
like, you know, go three times a year to a metaphysical store and you're going to end up populating your witch pantry. In just a couple of years. But part of it was just intention. Like it, so much of it is about setting the intention of what it is that you want to do. So don't be intimidated and think that you have to suddenly go out and spend thousands of dollars in order to get all of this stuff together.
Exactly. And like, you know, you're finding a witchcraft spell online and it says you have to use this herb and you're like, how the hell do I find that herb? But then you find out dandelion, which is just in your backyard, is maybe a compositionally similar. And I also think it's important to lead with your heart and your gut on this. If two herbs feel similar to you, use them, you know, switch them up. I think the biggest lesson, my theme for this episode, which I wanted to talk more about at the end, but I think we keep coming to it naturally, is when you are starting off witchcraft, embrace imperfectionism. That is the best thing you can do. Like learning that good enough is perfect is awesome. Like, you know, it doesn't have to be excellent. It doesn't have to be the exact way that it needs to be done. It doesn't have to be perfect. It's good enough. Mm-hmm. And that will work. And it will work and it will do. So I think the best kind of magic you can do is when you rummage through your pantry and you see what you have, see what herbs and spices you have. You know, you're going to have a lot of natural herbs in your house that you weren't aware that you had, ground up, crushed, dried. You can use those. All of those have metaphysical properties to them. And all of those are fair game for witchcraft. So, you know, please just do whatever you feel
even
is natural.
That giant Costco thing of dried parsley might actually have a purpose beyond my spaghetti.
Absolutely. What? Absolutely. I do a clearing ritual pretty regularly, which is called a Kernips ritual.
And
the entire ritual.
Say that again.
Kernips. So KHERNIPS for my spellers. Yes. It's literally just taking a sprig of thyme, lighting it, thinking of the thing you're trying to banish, and then dropping it in water, a bowl, and then letting it go out naturally. The thyme smell fills the air. It's literally just thyme, just a sprig of thyme. You can find them at Whole Foods, you know? Really, and it's the cheapest thing there.
That was the bougie witch thing to say. You can find it at Whole Foods.
I know. I just said Whole Foods, and I was like, oh, no. That's where I found it.
You can also find it at your local, whatever local market.
Yeah. But like, so, you know, when you're working with stones or when you're working with plants, lead with your heart and your gut, find things that call to you, and then do the work afterwards to find out why they call to you. And maybe then you can find other things that will call to you similarly, that are made up of same compositions.
Oh, I love that. So much of this is just getting people to listen to themselves and to just take a moment, you know, and you can use that internal gauge thing like we were talking about in episode, who knows, where it's like, you know, so I've seen witches where they won't have, what do you call it? Like the one herb, but they have this other, and they'll muscle test it. Can I use this herb instead of XYZ? And you know, if the gauge says yes, then they trust that and they just get the business, you know?
Oh, well, and especially because we've been doing this in our past lives, you know, a lot more than you probably think you do, you know, about this. And just a lot of my Hatch Witch journey was trusting that I know, you know, and trusting the process and trusting Oh, you know, so if I'm going to do a ritual, there's a few different kinds of rituals you can do. A ritual can be anything from lighting a candle and staring into it for 5 minutes in a dark room to spending hours doing a chant and drawing and whatever. A ritual can look like however you want it to. I try and do grounding rituals daily, like drinking tea. Breath work is a great ritual that you need to get into. We could do a breath work episode. I have a lot to say about breath work. But if I'm going to be doing a complex ritual, the things to keep in mind are the what, where, and how. What, where, when, and how. Starting with the when, I don't know if we've ever talked about phases of the moon. But yeah, essentially something you can keep in mind is the moon is kind of there to guide intentions a lot, and you can use it. You don't have to, but the cycle phases of the moon actually correspond really well with setting intentions for the month and doing your witchcraft intentions. When it's the new moon, you're setting brand new intentions all the way to the full moon, where you are crossing out those T's, if you will. Like, you are reaping the rewards of that intention. You are finalizing it. You're putting the cap on it. So thinking in mind of what kind of ritual you're doing will tell you, okay, should I correspond this with the phases of the moon? Waxing, meaning you're drawing things out. Waning, meaning you're drawing things in. You know, just keeping that in mind. So if I'm going to do a ritual, I'm probably going to do it on the full moon. I believe 3 days are fair game. So day before, day of, day after.
And there are those who say three days in either direction. There's still that energy that is there. But yes, the day of is going to be the most potent.
Absolutely. But, you know, be kind to yourself. If you don't make it day of, do it next week. It'll still it'll be fine.
That's me. That's how I practice.
I am going to go outside for my rituals. Usually I try and do them at night. I have this spot that is in a park that is pretty secluded, and it's a concrete picnic table. The concrete's nice because it's not going to catch anything on fire. It is set in the ground. It is not moving. And it's just really firm and solid. So I'm going to bring my goblet with me. I'm going to bring my knife. I'm going to bring my incense. And then I'm going to bring any herbs or rocks that call to me. I have a really, really nice piece of amethyst and really, really nice obsidian. And I'll bring both of those because they're very different energies, but both correspond with my deities. But the idea behind it is, you know, you get all your stuff and you set it up how it feels nice to you. Symmetry works wonderfully, you know, and you just set it up in a way with your candles and your incense and your knife where it's visually appealing to your eye. Don't overthink it, just set it up. And then all I do is I unsheath my knife, light my candles, and say I'm starting this ritual. From there, I think call and response is a big thing I like to do. Something to keep in mind with rituals, and we've talked about this in the past, the more people you're doing it with, the more powerful and crazy it's gonna get. So, you know, keep that in mind. So if I have my knife unsheathed and I'm trying to call in good fortune, I will say, I call in good fortune to me and those around me. And I think there's really good power in threes. So say it three times and say it out loud. I call in good fortune to me and those around me. I call in good fortune to me and those around me. I call in good fortune to me and those around me. And it's really nice to keep your breathing in mind. Keep in mind where you're centered. You know, draw out your root chakra, pull out your root cord, draw out your crown chakra and your crown cord. Allow yourself to be one with the environment. If you are with somebody, having them repeat what you're saying will be really powerful, but also be careful because whatever text you're reading, like, that's how we accidentally got my friend connected with Hecate. But, like, you know, they're happy about it. Hecate's cool, but it wasn't intentional.
Episode two, folks.
But, you know, just keep in mind what you're saying and do it with intention. And then I also think another meaty thing you can do in rituals is doing your own sigils, bringing scratch paper, drawing your sigils in the moment, and then either offering them to the land, burning them, or putting them somewhere with intention.
Burning and burying are two really potent ways of letting things go, right?
I will also say, if you were to touch on sigils real quick again, if you are doing a sigil for protection, for house healing or anything like that, put it in somewhere where you're going to see it every day. The second you stop looking at that sigil and it stops drawing your eye is when it starts working. So, you know, just having something that's going to become background for you and that eventually you're going to stop seeing and you're going to forget is there, then it's really going to work well.
Then it's fully charged, right?
Yeah. So then, yeah. And so, you know, you do your chants, you do sigil works, maybe you do some art. You drink your tea throughout and you're drinking your tea after, you know, you say a good chant or something like that. Really go with the flow, whatever calls to you in the moment. I really think keeping each ritual unique has a lot of power with it. And sit with it, sit with where you are. And then the last thing I'll do at the end of the ritual, which I do for every ritual, is we'll do a meditation. And the meditation specifically is I or somebody I'm with, one person gets to pick a song that they will play on their phone speaker. And the entirety of the song, I would say 3 to 5 minutes is our goal. The entirety of the song, we're going to keep our eyes closed and we're going to be breathing and thinking and processing. And if you focus on your breathing, your breath work, counting in, counting out for a full 5 minutes, you're going to be shocked what happens. Like it really just pulls you in and pulls you down. And especially when you choose the right song or music that calls to you, it's just a really nice, calming way to end the ritual. And then all you say is thank you to whoever was participating, physical, spiritual, or otherwise. Blow out your candles and close the ritual. And that's it.
Wow. The idea... You make it seem so simple, Jenny.
Exactly. Mine are a little more complicated now sometimes. But when I've had a really traumatic week of just PTSD triggering or really horrible things at work, I don't have the energy to do this crazy ritual that involves me making this thing and then, you know, bloodletting or something. I don't know. Like, I don't have the energy for that. I want to keep it simple. Yes. You know, kiss. Keep it simple, stupid. Like, you know, I think the less you have going into it, sometimes the better. I think some people really want to plan things out and that's fine. But if you were flying by the seat of your pants for a ritual, do it. Like, please do it. Like, please just do things and figure out what works for you. It's really the point of this episode is that none of this has to be difficult. None of this has to be scary. And none of this has to feel out of reach for you. You know, like it is for you. It is for everybody. And you can do whatever you want and your soul will thank you. So, yeah.
Because it's a conversation. That was kind of, and as it turns out, yeah. When you leave room, you know, for that wildness to come in, like really amazing and interesting and pertinent. They're always pertinent. Things will come into it. And a couple of things, if I can add just a couple from my own practice, one of the things that I learned was setting a circle was important for me. And not everybody wants to or needs to, but I will take back when I use this, now I just do it mentally or I use my hand. At some point, your hand becomes the extension and you don't. You know, you don't need the wand, but I will walk in a circle and I will just, you know, set intentions and say, this is of light and love. Nothing, you know, can come into this. One of the circles that I do in my house is evil may exit, but it may not enter. So like if you're feeling, you know, if you're feeling like particularly low energy or you feel like you're being, I don't know, like picked on by the world, this can also charge up that circle to let it get to work for you. And I think we all saw that movie, The Craft. So like some of our basics, I hate to say it, kind of comes from that movie. They got a lot of it like, right. Because why wouldn't it? Witchcraft fundamentally, you know, is of the earth and it's of light and love. And when you come to it from light and love, you know, it can be so very powerful. But another thing that I've seen in many of the different practices, not just witchcraft, but also, you know, like shamanism, et cetera, they'll call in the four corners. Or they'll, what else are they called? Are they four corners? I know that's what it is in shamanism, but in witchcraft, it's...
That's what it's called in the craft. Okay. So that's, calling the corners. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you know? Do you work with the corners? Do you do any of that?
I haven't personally worked with the corners at all. I think you're touching on a really great element of like setting the space and that, setting, you know, the space. Yep, when you are going to practice in a space, setting it up for yourself to practice, I think drawing a circle is great. For more intense clearing rituals, I have busted out the entire jar of Morton salt and done a circle around me. Or, you know, sand works really great as a circle too. But I've never called the four corners before. And I think calling in outside entities or work is a really interesting idea that I should maybe start doing more before
rituals. You know, and yeah, I have a friend too. We'll bring her in at some point, but she's done a lot of studying on the shamanic path. And the four corners is absolutely essential. It's actually more than four corners. There's northeast, west, south, but then there's also what's at the center. So maybe we'll get her to come in and talk about that. Because again, it's just, you know, making contact with the natural elements. And, you know, when you go back to Native American traditions, this is a big piece of it for sure, of acknowledging the land, acknowledging that you are part of this environment and you're asking it for its protection and its guidance, but you're also syncing with it and offering up, you know, yours. And then at the end, I think the only other thing that I would mention that if you do a circle, if you decide that that's something you would want to work with, you need to break the circle at the end.
Yeah.
And the way I always learned to do it was to go back with the knife, because the knife is also cord cutting. So there are some spells that folks do where they're like, you know what, like I need this person out of my life. I'm exhausted. You know, I've tried everything and it's just time to let this relationship go. So the knife implement may be a symbol. Symbolic and literal way of you saying, you know, I'm breaking off from it, but you can also use it at the end. You want to close the magic, you guys. You want to close the circle, close whatever you want to call it, right? So don't just walk away and go get something to eat. Like, make sure that you signify that this is the end of the magic, because it will carry on. So breaking the circle, releasing the corners. What was the thing that you said that you do?
Sheathing your knife, like I even think if it is just a simple candle ritual, you're staring into it, lighting the candles, opening it, and then verbally saying out loud, I now close this ritual, blow out the candle. Like, can be as simple as that too, you know, but I think closing it in general, opening it and closing it, setting that space and then releasing that space is really, really important.
And giving gratitude to it. I always say thank you three times. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, thank, you know, whatever you're around, if you do it with a tree, thank the tree. Give offerings to your space. You know, if you're using dry herbs, leave a little behind or leave a little food behind, you know, like, pay gratitude each time you're doing
this. Oh, I love that. That's so lovely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jenny, this is fantastic. I'm so
glad. Yay. I hope so. This was very prepared, but also off the cuff for me, because like this is just what the 3 years have been for me. Yeah. And now I feel confident enough in my bull crap, if you will, that it's not bull crap anymore. It's real to me. So I'm like, you know, this is all just kind of made up, but it's based off of books. I will say a couple things.
What's in practice?
We are going to be, so the main books that I was referencing today were my two Hecate books, obviously, Entering Hecate's Garden. This is the book that helped me to understand each of the metaphysical properties to plants, specifically the planets, the astrology, and all that stuff. It's by Cindy Brannon. She's really great. We're going to post links to both of these books, and then just a couple links to sigil work and as well as candle work. So, you know, that'll all be available when this episode eventually comes out. I appreciate everybody following along today. I hope this was useful, at least a little bit for people. Please take what you want from this and discard the rest. That is why we are here.
Which, by the way, is one of the tenets of all of this is, you know, take what is meaningful to you, let go of the rest. So mote it be.
So mote it be.
I remember. Yay. It's been a while, but I remember.
I remember.